Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the weekend preview on the Athletic Football Podcast, sponsored by Bet365. I'm Dan Bardell, and each and every Friday we preview the best of the weekend's Premier League action alongside Bet365's Steve Freith. Steve, how are you?
Looking forward to this.
Good stuff, me too. And as usual, we've got George Ellock here with us as well. I always says ask George if he's busy. He's always busy. I'm not going to ask you this. I'm not going to ask you if you're busy this week, George. I'm just going to ask you if you've had a good week.
Yeah, I've had a good week. I've got an interesting weekend ahead of me because I got married in July. And it's my post-wedding stag this weekend. So it's been... because it had been delayed so many times due to COVID delays. My best man, my brother and my best mate were determined to still make sure I got a send-off. So I have no idea what I'm doing this weekend. But trepidation creeping in now on the eve of it. So we'll see.
Feels like a bit of a strange rule change, that doing the stag do afterwards. And there has been another rule change or a rule change that's upcoming in football. The great five segue. Substitutes looking, thank you. It was pretty poor, wasn't it? It was really not working well at all, that. Yeah, it looks like five substitutes is going to become a permanent feature in football after a rule change to the laws of the game. I'll come to you first, Steve. A good or a bad idea?
I suppose the argument for the lesser sides will be that the better sides will be even better, I suppose.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that naturally springs to my mind.
Yeah, I think any rule change where it's going to clearly benefit those with deeper squads and more money is not a good thing. There are clearly issues surrounding the amount of games that the teams or the players are having to play through the summer with multiple different competitions, racking up the miles, going into Europe and all these other things, where that cannot be a good thing. But in terms of just competitive balance, it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem particularly fair. And the thing that really annoys me, and I know this, a lot of people say this, is we had, last season we had Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola in particular arguing in favour of the five sub rule, and they're not really ever using them. It seems to be more Pep's case. He talks about the need to rest players, but it seems to be more an ability to make five changes if the games are going against them rather than being able to give players a rest. So I'd tell them to give it a rest and let's just crack on the way we are.
Yeah, I quite like having the nine subs to choose from because I think it encourages more youngsters to get on the bench. I mean, you have to look at Cole Palmer, sorry, for Manchester City. He wouldn't be getting on the bench probably if there were seven subs. So it is a chance for all clubs across the football pyramid to integrate youth a bit more and give them match day experience, and I like that. But you see the five subs in the Champions League. Manchester United could make five subs against Atalanta. When you've got the depth of squad that the clubs like that have got, it isn't fair. And it's just going to encourage clubs to stockpile players a little bit more. You look how many players Chelsea have got in their squad. Yeah, I'm not sure about it. I don't think it's fair on anyone but the top four.
There's a knock-on effect as well in the way that talent is able to then filter down the pyramid. If you are a Manchester City or a Liverpool and you have a player who's going to be on the fringes of the first team, knowing that you're going to be able to make five changes a game is going to make you more likely to keep a player close by in case of injuries and other things, even if they're not likely to be in that nine. And there's almost something a bit ironic about certain managers who I've already mentioned talking about the need for B teams whilst also pushing for a rule that's going to further stifle the opportunity for those players to go out and play men's football. So I'm fully in agreement that it would benefit the people who already have a lot of football channeled towards them being in the best possible position. So I'm definitely against it.
Yeah, let's get that in the bin, although it looks like it's happening. Before we get into the first game of the weekend, remember you can sign up to The Athletic and save 33% on access to the best newsroom in sports currently. That's just £3.33 a month for an entire year. To take advantage of that offer, just head to theathletic.com/footballpod. Right, then Saturday lunchtime game this weekend is Leicester against Arsenal, Steve. And, you know, Leicester have won the last couple of games. They look like they're getting more like the Leicester of the last few seasons. They've had injury problems. They've had integration issues with getting new players into the system, into the team. But they're starting to come good again now. So are Arsenal. This could be a good game.
Yeah, looking forward to this one. I have to say, Dan, two form sides. The betting's quite close as well. Leicester are favourites to win it, as you'd expect. And you know my love for Johnny Evans as well, which is, you know, great to see him back in the fold. They're still conceding goals, which is a bit unfortunate, but it's just, you know, a bit of a safety blanket, the fact that he's there, you know what I mean? So, of course, Arsenal were linked with Johnny Evans not that long ago. When he was at Albion, you know, Arsenal fans were kind of scoffing. In fact, football fans were kind of scoffing that somebody, a team as big as Arsenal, should be linked with Johnny Evans. I'll tell you what, I bet you Manchester United wish they had him still. Believe me, what a player he is.
I still think he'd get into most Premier League sides.
Oh, he would.
Being perfectly honest, Johnny Evans, especially with his leadership as well that he offers. Yeah, he'd get in most sides.
No doubt about it. I know he's coming towards the end now. You know, he's early 30s. But yeah, he's, of course, you know, you can see the shirt behind me. I know it doesn't work on a podcast, but yeah, he's a great player. And I hope he has a fantastic performance against Arsenal on Saturday. In what I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, and one guy who I think would definitely get into most Premier League sides is Youri Tielemans, George. A couple of bangers in the last few weeks. He only scores good goals, Tielemans. Such a good player, but been a good player now for a number of years, a high-quality central midfield player. I said this on another podcast that I do. If I was picking the best 11 in the Premier League and I was really doing it properly and I was looking for balance and players that would let the attacking players shine, I'd have Tielemans in my team.
Yeah, he's just 24 years of age as well. Doesn't turn 25 till next May. One of the best centre midfielders in the Premier League, I would say. His goal, his strike early on against Brentford was the lowest XG goal so far this season in the Premier League, meaning it was the most unlikely goal to be scored from a shot so far this season. What a hit it was as well. And I think there is an argument to be had that Leicester have been somewhat forgotten in this whole Premier League season so far because they had a difficult start. Some people seem to just write them off as being a team who weren't going to hit the heights that many people, such as myself, were kind of predicting at the beginning of the season. And I think we're now starting to see, partly with Evans coming back, making a difference defensively, definitely, that those, not obituaries, but those takes off the back of poor early season form might have been a bit premature. Now, they are conceding goals, as Steve just said. But if you have a look through their previous, you know, four or five games, they conceded two against Burnley. Burnley had an XG of just 0.43. They conceded two against Palace, who had an XG of 1.17. Conceded two against Manchester United, who had an XG of just 1. And then a goal against Brentford from 1 XG. So that, yes, they're conceding goals, but game in, game out, they're kind of conceding somewhere around 1 or below expected goals per game, which is totally fine, especially given quality of opposition, certainly in those last two wins against United and Brentford being, you'd think, around about top half quality, although that might be a bit toppy on Brentford. But either way, I do think things are trending in the right direction. I think the performances are getting better. I think Brendan Rodgers coming out and very much kind of declaring himself not interested in the Newcastle job maybe has given this whole project a little bit of reinvigoration, because, as I said at the top of the answer, they are a side and a football club who don't want their one Premier League title to be a bizarre anomaly. They are investing in players like Tielemans, who are destined for the very top of the game. They have aspirations to get into the top four and back into the Champions League fairly soon.
The formation change, guys, sorry, has helped, hasn't it, as well? You know, the two up top with Vardy getting some support as well. Clearly, you know, the three at the back as well has helped. And I'm in agreement with George. I think they have kind of been forgotten. They are kind of the outsiders of the chasing pack, so to speak, as regards to the top four. But now they keep on winning games, and I think it's quite an exciting period for Leicester, and they've got every chance of kicking on, I think.
Yeah, new training ground, amazing as well. Samora starting to settle in midfield, and Patson Daka is starting to show his quality as well, and he's going to get some chances perhaps now with Vardy injured. The Athletic's analytics writer Tom Warville has had a closer look at Daka for us, so let's take a listen.
So what is Patson Daka good at? Coming from Red Bull Salzburg, he played in a front two with Seko Koita and performed a really, really good partnership there. And obviously his scoring numbers really speak for themselves. But what you have with Daka is someone who can play on the last shoulder, is good at running with the ball. And those are two things that are kind of elements of goals that Jamie Vardy would score regularly for Leicester. You can see how he would kind of sit like for like in Vardy's role. But also, he's comfortable with the ball at his feet, and that means that he's someone who can drop deep, he can link play at times, and then spin and you know, get in behind from that point. So those are some of the main features of Daka's play. And I think that partnership with Koita is really important because I think long-term, the thinking is to have Daka and Iheanacho. Iheanacho, the kind of very good on-the-ball player, being the kind of more of the platform striker, and Daka being the one who peels in behind, gets into good positions to shoot from consistently, and is a good finisher as well. So I think as a tandem, given their ages, given their experience, it sets Leicester up very, very well in the post-Jamie Vardy era.
Thanks very much to Tom there. George, let's finish the Leicester v Arsenal preview with a tip from you.
So look to the goalscorer markets, especially because if, as we think, Jamie Vardy is unfit to start this one, then you've got a Leicester side who are favourites here with Kelechi Iheanacho at 6-1, first goal scorer, 15-8 anytime. Patson Daka, 13-2, first goal scorer, 2-1 anytime. I'm not going to rush to back either of those. I think the value might lie in James Maddison, who's 100-30 to score anytime. Now, he got the winner against Brentford in midweek and came out afterwards saying that he'd had a bit of a crisis of confidence, but he feels back towards where he thinks he should be. And you look at his goal scoring record when he's been playing well, and it is very, very good. You know, last season, he scored 8 goals in 24 starts and 7 sub appearances, averaging a goal in under every 3 games, so better than a goal every 3 games. Before that, he scored 6 in the season before. He had 3 shots against Brentford. And I just wonder if the lack of that kind of goal scoring focal point in Vardy just makes the likelihood of him scoring just that little bit greater. You know, he is a goal threat, he is somebody who likes to get his shots off. And whilst, you know, if Daka does come in, I have a feeling the other thing they could do is bring Harvey Barnes in after his good display midweek on the left-hand side and switch back to a front three with Iheanacho in the middle. But either way, Maddison will be playing 10, whether it's behind 2 or behind 1. And at 130, I think he's a little bit overpriced to score any time.
Yeah, I was quite not encouraged. But, you know, the goal he scored against Brentford, it wasn't a typical Maddison goal.
No.
So perhaps adding little facets to his game that haven't been there before, which will only be a good thing for Leicester and a good thing for James Maddison. Let's look now at Spurs versus Manchester United, the Saturday tea time kickoff, Steve. Watched both of those teams last weekend. Big problems all round.
Yeah. I mean, clearly, you know, George was extremely sweet on a Liverpool victory at Old Trafford, and he's probably been reveling in it this week as well. So, did you back 5-0, George, by the way? I thought you might have gone at some high correct scores.
I backed most of the handicaps, so we did okay. It was a decent day Sunday.
No, that's good. Listen, I mean, I say we said before, Ollie's kind of pulled results out the bag in the big games before, but this felt different. The win over Atalanta was kind of papering over the cracks. I mean, it's been highlighted in The Athletic this week. Just the sight of all those Manchester United players running back to goal, trying to close down Salah and Keita. It kind of looked like it was from injury time when they was chasing the game, when in reality it was in the 5th minute and Liverpool had just passed all the way through them basically to get to the edge of their area. Just complete and utter rag-ass Rovers type of stuff, wasn't it? You know, it was just completely embarrassing. Just, you know, the scrutiny of the lack of pressing. And I suppose the elephant in the room really is Ronaldo, where it was kind of heralded as a great signing, a marquee signing, the type of signing to get them pushing towards the title, when really it's been derailed before it's even started. And Ollie's talked about the pressing on the front foot, you know, at home against Liverpool, when really their pressing data generally has been bottom five, and just relying on magic that just hasn't happened. I thought the lack of discipline as well was really showing the likes of Pogba, Ronaldo, just a complete lack of just discipline. And the fact that Jordan Henderson, I've always been a Jordan Henderson fan, but he was absolutely majestic, even against 11 men on Sunday as well. 144 touches, 128 passes. Not many are going to top that this season. And I thought he was absolutely superb.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a massive surprise. I must say, I was a little bit concerned from my own, you know, financial point of view when the team news came out, because Liverpool were clearly lacking a couple of key players. Fabinho, probably the obvious one, but it didn't matter in the end because one team was very well drilled and knew exactly what their job was to do, and they had the best player in the world in top form in Mohamed Salah to score a hat-trick. I think the first opposition player to score a hat-trick at Old Trafford in the Premier League. In terms of Ronaldo, because this seems to be the new line, is that Ronaldo came in and things fell apart. I don't think that's right. I think that Ronaldo showed in a brief snippet what he's still capable of doing with that disallowed goal. I mean, what a goal that was. I still maintain that, you know, a better tactician, a better manager would be working out how to build a team around Cristiano Ronaldo that wouldn't matter if he didn't have the legs to press or really the willingness to press either. So I still think there's a very good squad there. What strikes me as being the most likely thing that's going to happen now, and this is the cycle that is consistent with Manchester United and Solskjaer, even though Sunday did feel different, this Manchester United side is good enough that they will turn it around. They will win games of football. And I'm sure the hierarchy at Manchester United know that. You know, this is not the first time that United have had a poor run under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Normally, when the easier fixtures come around, they sort it out, they pick up enough points to push them into the top six or whatever. And then the fans who are happy to have a United legend in charge are happy again, and those who aren't are just shouting into the void. And that is probably what they're hoping is going to start this weekend. It is, in a way, the perfect game for Manchester United to have here. Not only is there the narrative after the 6-1 defeat last season, where this group of players are going to have something of a revenge to go in search of, but also it's a scalp in terms of it being an away game against a side in Spurs who've been a top six club at worst over the last few seasons, but also a club who are arguably in a worse position than Manchester United, or at least on a par. But at the same time, nobody is unaware of the fact that Tottenham are currently in this bad position. If they follow up that performance and result on Saturday with another poor performance, which is easily going to be the case. Steve mentioned there the lack of discipline around the United players, and that suggests to me that something is going to have to change massively in terms of their mindset in order to rally after what was such an abject display, both in terms of individual errors, in terms of this weird pressing idea, which, if there's ever been a more clear example that the level of coaching at Manchester United is just so far beneath the talent of the players, where pressing isn't the person closest to the ball charges the ball down. That's not how it works. Because then if other people are picking up players, you've got one person missing, and you saw the overlaps, you know, the amount of space that Salah and Keita were in for that first goal, 4 minutes into a game of that magnitude, was just totally showed a team who are unaware of how they're meant to be playing. You know, you look at Maguire and Shaw, these are two guys who have proven themselves at the top level to be very, very capable defenders. Sure, a brilliant outlet going forward, who look totally lost and at sea. And you can't lay the blame down at their door for that because they don't know how they're meant to be playing. You know, Gareth Southgate gets a lot of criticism for his tactical acumen, but you look at the disciplined performances of Maguire and Shaw compared to what they're putting in at the moment at United, and it's chalk and cheese. So if I was a Manchester United fan, I'd be very confused as to what I want to happen this weekend, because you know, you talk about the Atalanta performance and the comeback and the result papering over the cracks. Well, anything that United do now, any turnaround of form or decent performance, is papering over the cracks as to what is just inevitably going to end in them having to replace Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as manager, whether it's next week or whether it's in 6 months.
I mean, I think we can all agree that Manchester United's performance was obviously car crash stuff. It was difficult to watch at times, actually, seeing Manchester United play like that, Steve. But I watched Spurs in the game before, and okay, it was a lot defensively sounder than the Manchester United performance. But watching Spurs go forward, they're just so uninspiring. Offered absolutely nothing in that game. And I'm talking nothing, I didn't think. It was such a poor display. So if Manchester United are bad at the back, Spurs are as abject going forward.
Yeah, uninspiring. Do you think that's the Nuno appointment as a whole, if you're a Spurs fan?
I've not seen much. I know they won the first three, didn't they? But, you know, I've not seen much since then of Spurs to give encouragement.
if you're a Spurs fan, I think it's first and foremost for him to get Wolves A into the Premier League and B to them to get seventh place on two consecutive seasons is one hell of an achievement. But clearly Spurs and Wolves are two different fan mentalities as well. You know, Spurs think they've got this, you know, right to play a certain brand of football. Nuno doesn't exactly bring you that certain brand of football, does he? I think if you're a Spurs fan, you'd have been underwhelmed by the appointment. And I just think that, I mean, for me, what summed up the game last week was the will and the desire of Mikel Antonio to score that goal. And it was being marked by Harry Kane, who just seemed to just stick out his leg half-heartedly to try and stop it. Whether he was caught unawares by the ball coming in or wasn't, it just seemed a little bit embarrassing. And it kind of summed up their season generally as a whole. His body language just wasn't fantastic. Antonio just wanted it more, just busting a gut. A player so full of confidence, so full of goals at the moment, just to get another goal to add it to his tally for this season. And it's completely different from Kane. I thought Spurs were very poor at the Hammers. And I thought West Ham, you know, were deserved victors in that game as well. Having said that, though, Spurs are still fifth favourites to finish in the top four as well at 9-2. So clearly, from a bookmaking point of view, we still think there's a little bit more in the tank, you know, for Nuno and Spurs yet. So it would probably be folly to, you know, to write them off. And clearly, Nuno's only been there for 5 minutes compared to Ollie, who's been there for nearly 3 years. So
yeah,
I don't see Nuno going anywhere soon. And hopefully, yeah, hope he can kick on. And you know, this game against Manchester United will be a great platform to do that.
Go on then, George, give us your tip.
I'm pretty surprised to see how short Manchester United are on the back of the result. You know, you've got Tottenham 15-8, the draw 13-5, 11-8 Manchester United to win. I'm just going to back Spurs to win at 15-8. I'm not a fan of this Spurs side. At the moment, I couldn't agree more about their performance on Sunday. The only thing I would say is that at least they, for the first time this season, they looked to understand how to keep possession of the ball. Now, I know they did absolutely nothing with it, but that in itself is progress, because I haven't really understood what the game plan's meant to be so far this season. But I just think with home advantage, and given that there is a fair chance here that Manchester United, if you look at the discipline of the players, if you look at a fair few of the quite concerning comments from certain key players in the press about what they think is going on there, it's a massive job from everyone at the club to motivate themselves to bounce back from that. And I'm purely taking a chance. I don't think there's a great deal between the two sides. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Manchester United are by far the better side and win this game 2-0. But I'm just going to chance on the fact that it's going to be tough for them to bounce back. And an early goal could make it very difficult if they did concede it, and think that Spurs have to be worth basically chancing at 15-8.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Game three sees us look at Norwich against Leeds. Now, Steve, a sluggish start from Leeds has quickly turned into looking a little bit like a relegation fight. They've had injuries. You know, Bielsa likes to work with a small squad anyway. Are you concerned for them?
No, I'm not. I think they'll be okay. The Leeds United were the hipster's choice last season. You know, they were finishing the top half. They were great to watch, new to the Premier League. They finished off the season very nicely with some nice dead rubbers. I think they won the last four, which might have flattered them just a little bit. You've mentioned injuries there, Dan. Bielsa's not been anywhere near his favoured 11 this season. Key injuries as well. You know, the likes of Bamford, Phillips, Ayling, of course, as well, has been out. And frustratingly for him, I would imagine, the form of some key players who were so pivotal for them last season. I'm thinking of the players like Click, Harrison. I think some of these players have had COVID as well. So the type of football that they play, you know, and coming back from such a thing as COVID as well, cannot have been ideal. The new signings, the few new signings that he's brought in as well, I don't think they've hit the ground running. I think one signing that they got very close to by all accounts, but have missed out, and we've seen him flourish elsewhere because he wanted to stop in London, was Conor Gallagher. I think he would have been absolutely super.
Ideal for Leeds.
Yeah, for, you know, that number eight. I think the last senior midfielder, they central midfielder sign was Adam Forshaw back in 2018. So that's been a while in that department there. But he's been brilliant, you know, Conor Gallagher, and I'm pretty sure he would have been absolutely fantastic for them as well. So at this stage, yeah, listen, they were 9-1 pre-season for relegation. They're into 7-2 now. I'm not that concerned, Dan, at this fairly early stage, a quarter of the way through the season.
Rafinha's the boy, though, isn't he, George, for Leeds? You know, once he gets fit and firing again, he is a game changer. One of the most fascinating players to watch in the Premier League, in my opinion.
Yeah, he is. And I think a few Leeds fans are pretty concerned when he hobbled off against Wolves over the weekend in that 1-1 draw, where I think it's worth pointing out that even though Leeds' form is pretty poor, they deserve to win that game. They were the better side throughout and will be...
Yeah, a lot of chances.
And they'll be frustrated that they failed to, you know, having scored a very late penalty to get the point. I think on the balance of play, they'll be disappointed they couldn't get back into it earlier. And get the 3 points. Although, you know, game state, obviously, when you're 1-0 down after 10 minutes, does suggest you're naturally going to be the team on top. With Rafinha, Leeds fans were concerned. There seems to be a suggestion where he came out afterwards and said the injury was nowhere near as bad as it initially looked. And there seems to be some suggestion that he could even start here against Norwich, which would be a massive boost because, you know, they're missing Patrick Bamford, who's had a poor start to the season anyway. They're missing Luke Ayling, who's so important to them, both defensively and going forward as well. So to lose Rafinha as well would see them really kind of at the pits. And we saw how poor they were in the 1-0 loss at Southampton a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I'm not overly concerned about Leeds, especially in terms of relegation. I'm disappointed as somebody who's followed Marcelo Bielsa's time there and loved watching this team through the Championship into the Premier League. I'm disappointed to see them looking like a bit of a shadow of their former selves. And this game in itself is a massive pressure game because they're, irrespective of whether you've got injuries or not, at the moment, the way that Norwich are playing and the way that most teams have no issue beating them, even if it's unfair to expect them to win on the road, anything but a win will see their stock fall even further. So I'm interested to see how it's going to play out. Two teams who are obviously very aggressive off the ball, although Norwich have seemingly kind of parked that side of their game for the time being. But yeah, Rafinha being present in this game should be a massive boost to them because given Norwich's defensive frailties, he should be able to dominate.
Fatigue is always something that gets levelled at Leeds, George, if things aren't going well. Is that a factor at all? I mean, it's very early on in the season, but, you know, Bielsa does have tough demands on his players, both in training and on match days. Is it three seasons under Bielsa? Is it the fourth season?
Fourth season
under Bielsa now. You know, is it a burnout? Because sometimes it could be a mental burnout as well.
It's hard to say. I mean, there was that in his first season, there was a period in the Championship where Leeds' form tailed off massively in the second half of the season. And a lot of people pointed at burnout, saying this is what always happens with Bielsa. But the underlying numbers hadn't changed. The running metrics hadn't changed. Probably the only time that running metrics actually mean anything when you're talking about fatigue and burnout. All the stuff suggested they were still playing well. They were just going through a run, you know, a bad run of form, despite the performances not dipping, which can happen. Now, there are issues in terms of key personnel. You know, you look at Calvin Phillips, you look at the demands that have been asked of him for the past three seasons under Marcelo Bielsa. He had an injury last season as well. Then having to play every game in the Euros for England in centre midfield was a massive summer for him. He's had injury issues coming back into the side this season. It's understandable if the type of football that Marcelo Bielsa wants to play doesn't really suit somebody who's had to play so much football and had his own injury concerns as well. Is that Bielsa's fault? Probably not. Is it burnout? I guess it's that's a symptom maybe of what's going on. But it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Leeds bounce back very quickly. I don't think this is going to be a lasting issue. I don't think you know, for a second after four seasons of playing under Bielsa, they're suddenly the fitness levels have dipped to an extent that they're unable to execute his plan. So I think it's probably more to do with personnel and, as you mentioned, not being able to play his first side.
I think they'll go on a run, Lee. I think once they win one, they'll get a bit of rhythm and they'll get themselves going again. Now, we spoke at length about Norwich before and after their 7-0 thrashing last weekend, so make sure you listen back to Monday's episode with Mark Chapman for more on the Canaries. But before we finish with this game, Steve, can I have a prediction, please?
Yeah, I mean, this time last season, Dan, I think Leeds had just come back off two back-to-back 4-1 defeats against Leicester and Palace. And at this stage last season, they conceded, I think, just one more goal. They've conceded one more goal this season. So, again, they go to Norwich, I think. Their odds against to win around the 11-10 mark, which surprised me. Even though they have, you know, their troubles at the moment, I thought there would be odds on to win down there. They're not. Their odds against. And just like you've just said, Dan, I think Leeds are capable of going down there and getting three valuable points and kicking on up the table.
Right then, the one I've been looking forward to, game four, Aston Villa v West Ham. Yeah, love speaking to Steve off the back of three defeats in a row for Villa. Absolutely excellent stuff. Now, when you're on a bad run, you mean, as I say, lost three in a row to Spurs, to Arsenal and to Wolves, not in that order. I would say this is a tougher game than all of them. West Ham, they are one of the form teams in the Premier League, one of the best teams to watch. And when you've got a problem conceding set pieces like Villa have at the moment, West Ham aren't really who you want to be facing.
No, definitely not, Dan. I mean, it's my best mate's a Villa fan as well. I've had him on the phone every day talking about the last three games. The first half.
I bet it was
half...
you calling him as well. I bet it wasn't the other way around.
You were dreadful. First half against Arsenal.
Oh, embarrassing, yeah.
Of course, Smith Rowe had a blinder, as you'd expect after being linked with him. You know, 14 shots they had, didn't he? Five on target, a number of big chances, whereas Villa, you know, just nothing happened at all. You mentioned set plays. Is it five of the last six that you've conceded goals from now have been?
Yeah, penalties, direct free kick and corners.
Yeah, I think the big factor that I keep getting told is the fact that, you know, Ollie Watkins seems bang out of form at the moment. Is that all down to Jack not being there? Because he and Jack seem to have a brilliant relationship, didn't they?
Obviously, Grealish not being there has an effect on the football club, yeah. I think it's more to do with, at the moment, Watkins and Ings as a partnership. I mean, my Athletic 1874 podcast colleague Greg Evans has done an article on this morning. Ings and Watkins isn't clicking. Yeah. Watkins led the line alone last season to brilliant effect, was one of the best lone forwards in the Premier League last season. It just hasn't quite come together for Ings and Watkins so far, that they're not really linking up at all. Buendia's brought in to be the playmaker. He's not really got going, looks a little bit lost in the middle of the park. I think they're going to have to look at moving him back into his preferred position out wide. And then Leon Bailey, who's a fantastic player, has barely got on the pitch. So I think there's a few mitigating circumstances for Villa start and the way they're playing at the moment. But, you know, George, three at the back. I don't know whether you watched Villa against Arsenal on Friday. That was a bit of a clinic in how not to play three at the back.
Yeah, it was. And the defensive numbers are what's troubling me the most about Villa at the moment, where, you know, you look at the XG stuff. Sorry for those who get tired of this, but, you know, Arsenal had an XG of 3.5 against you, which is just, you know, often you can watch a game and it can feel like one team's on top and the other's under the cosh. You look at the numbers afterwards and you realise that quite a lot of those chances were maybe, you know, quite low XG chances. Not the case here. And then even against Wolves, conceding 2.2 XG for the three goals as well. So Villa are conceding goals, as you say, looking very disorganised defensively. That, you know, the press that was so effective last season against bigger sides seems to be bypassed fairly comfortably at the moment. It's hard to put your finger on what exactly is going right rather than what's going wrong at the moment. You know, key players have to come into it. We've spoken about Buendia on this pod before, and you know, he is a player that I have no doubt if Villa can keep hold of him until things are better, he'll start to improve. But he's not going to be the answer. He's not going to be the person that turns this around. You know, Leon Bailey, you're asking a lot for him to do the same. It strikes me as being to do with organisation, to do with understanding how you're going to set up defensively in order to provide that platform to play the kind of high-pressing, energetic football that Dean Smith likes to play. And the question I have for you is that, you know, I'm a huge Dean Smith fan. I'm a massive fan of him as a coach and as a man, to be honest. And, you know, he deserves immense respect for what he's done at Villa so far. Is he getting under pressure? Like, if there's another abject performance, given the wealth and the ambition of the Villa owners, how much longer will they stand for, you know, it feels like only a couple of weeks ago we were talking about Villa's decent start and how great a job Smith was doing, but pretty quickly things seem like they've turned around.
I think if you lose four in a row, any manager in the Premier League, you're going to be under a little bit of pressure. I would say the fixtures are a little bit kinder. After this, there's a run of kinder games, which if you know if you can pull together a couple of wins, you're then looking at being somewhere near the top six, top seven again. Villa fans don't like it, but it will be a transitional season because so much of the football club was built around Jack Grealish and he's not there anymore and that isn't going to just come good overnight. They're going to have to try and build slowly against it. Dean Smith, I feel a bit sorry for him because since he's been at the club really, just been in the club's just been in constant flux, constant rebuilds. He got them promoted ahead of time and then had to buy a load of players because they had ageing players and loan players in the Championship and they just had to do too much business and it didn't really come together and they stayed up by the skin of the teeth. Then last season was a bit more of a consolidation season, which he did, and there wasn't so much of a rebuild, just cleverer signings. And I don't think they wanted to have as high a turnover this summer as they've had. So I just think Villa being in a state of flux hasn't helped. I think he's done a great job, but I think, you know, Newcastle are trying to hire a manager at the moment. You look at Tottenham and Manchester United potentially looking at new managers in the future, and there's not a lot of available great managers around. I think sometimes it's a bit better the devil you know. And I don't know whether John Terry leaving has played a part because we don't look the same defensively. But I'm very pro Dean Smith, although that wasn't the case on social media on Friday, although I'm not really sure that social media is a great barometer of how things are, Steve.
No, no, definitely not, Dan. Would you stick with a five at the back? Even I suppose from a height point of view, even against West Ham, do you have to shoehorn a few in because of the way they are from set plays? Would you say, or
I don't know, because I wouldn't associate Arsenal with being brilliant at set players, but they looked like they were going to score off every corner.
They've been practicing by all accounts, according to the Athletic, with their new set piece coach. I mean, let's be honest, who hasn't got a new set piece coach in
We've got one. We need to do a bit more work on the defensive side. The attacking side was going well, defensive not so much now. Villa fans will be livid if we play three at the back again.
Yeah, I suppose.
Livid.
Best team then, Dan. What you're saying, 4-3-3 with Bailey, Ings, Watkins up top?
Yeah, I think that's what he's going to have to... I think that's what we'll line up with. I'm not sure I know our best team at the moment, but I'd say that's what he's going to have to line up with on Sunday. I think Buendia will drop out and Jacob Ramsey will come into midfield. Villa have to play three in midfield. They have to play three central midfielders because they just get overrun when they don't. And Ramsey coming out the side has actually coincided with a couple of bad results. Scored a nice goal against Arsenal as well.
Good to see Matty Cash declaring for Poland. A nice little... He's not going to get a look in for England, is he? So glad he's going to have a chance to play international football.
Putting the crosses in for Lewandowski, that'll be quite nice for Matty Cash. We've done a lot about Villa and West Ham in recent weeks, George. Let's just touch on West Ham, who dumped Man City out of the League Cup on penalties in midweek. Man City finally losing a game in the League Cup. It'd be nice for Moyes to get a trophy, wouldn't it? Whatever they do this season, and I'm sure they've got top four, top six ambitions. For David Moyes would love to win a trophy. And for the career he's had, probably deserves to win a trophy as well.
Yeah, he definitely does. It's funny, I've seen probably more on social media in the last 6 hours after their penalty win against City in the Carabao Cup, praising his performance than I did for most of last season when he led them into Europe over a 38-game Premier League campaign. Look, he's obviously just a very, very good coach whose reputation and, his reputation just took such a massive knock as a consequence of landing the biggest job in European football at the time. And I think a lot of people, myself included, probably forgot a little bit about what he had done previously. You know, you look at the jobs he'd done at Sunderland and afterwards even at Sociedad, he wasn't given a chance. This is the first time since being Manchester United manager where David Moyes has been manager of a football club for an extended period of time. And the quality and his ability to get results and the individual players who are improving. You know, we've spoken about Mikel Antonio here before, but he continues just to elevate himself as a footballer. And that is the case with a lot of these players. You know, Declan Rice, a lot of people thought he had to leave West Ham to further his own personal development. No, I mean, he's developing massively at West Ham under Moyes. So, yeah, I mean, he certainly deserves a trophy, but I have a feeling he would probably take another sixth place finish and, you know, a big run in the Europa League, probably over winning the Carabao Cup.
And yeah, they're managing the load of the Europa League and the Premier League very well so far. Mm. I know it's early days, but they're dealing very well with that. Not the largest squad in the world, but, you know, just little tweaks here and there seems to be working for them. Come on then, George, depress me. How's this game going to play out on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, West Ham are the favourites at 6-4. I think that's short enough for me to get involved with away from home, especially given, you know, the clear qualities that Villa have in their side. But those underlying numbers that I mentioned of Villa defensively set off massive alarm bells. And it wouldn't surprise me if West Ham were at the very least the dominant force in this game up until the first goal is scored. So I'm going to back Mikel Antonio, the man in form, the guy who's causing every single defence problems that he's playing against at the moment. We've spoken about the lack of organisation in the Villa backline recently. So at 11-2 for Antonio to score first, given they're the favourites. It wouldn't surprise me massively if after West Ham do go ahead, or if West Ham did go ahead, Villa came back into it. But given the recent defensive issues, that 11-2 seems big to me.
Thanks ever so much, George. Cheered Sorry. Me up. No end.
I said you might come back into it.
I know. I didn't believe you. I think you were just saying that to me out of absolute sympathy. Right then, before we continue with the podcast, please remember that if you are going to have a bet this weekend, make sure that you do so responsibly. George, you've got some helpful tips on how to make sure that we do just that.
Yeah, it's important to us that the listeners of this podcast are in control of their gambling. This is a podcast for those who are 18 years of age and older. Please ensure that you are only staking what you can afford to lose, and do visit begambleaware.org for any information to ensure that you're gambling responsibly.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Game 5 is Wolves v Everton, the Monday night football. Now, I'll open this up to either of you because I can't explain it. Can anyone explain what happened to Everton at the weekend against Watford?
Well, it was a crazy like 10 odd minutes, wasn't it? It was, there were 450-1 to win that game, 5-2, by the way. There was just some crazy Everton defending. I'm just put it as a one-off maybe. Maybe they were missing Mina from set plays. Obviously, Calvert-Lewin not been in the team either, you know, in your own box doesn't help matters. Doucouré to a lesser extent, I would say. And Ben Godfrey isn't the tallest at 6 foot. I think it was just one of those crazy 10, 15 minutes that Rafa's going to certainly be ironing out this weekend on the training ground. It was a great view in mind, but not if you're an Everton fan.
Yeah, all that game was players scoring against their old team, George. That was what that game was, wasn't it? Josh King and Richarlison.
Yeah, I think, you know, Michael Cox made a good point in his review of the game on The Athletic, saying that surely Richarlison now just has to play up front. End the Rondon experiment for the time being. I know he's an old ally of Rafa Benitez, but in Richarlison they have a player who, yes, he might be better coming off the wing, but he is a very good goal scorer, a very good player. He did it, but then it was Josh King who, you know, Josh King's now scored 51 Premier League goals, which took me by surprise off 179 odd games.
Me too.
Yeah. It's 179 games, so it's a decent strike rate as well. And he's a player who, you know, before he left Bournemouth, he was linked to Villa for a time. He was even being linked before Cavani turned up as a possibility for Manchester United just to get bodies in as a striker. And he's a guy who probably doesn't get the credit that he deserves. He didn't score any goals in his very brief spell where he didn't play much at Everton last season. But he proved here how good he can be. And, you know, the narrative around this game seems to be the Everton collapse. And that's fair, because when you concede 5 goals at home to a side who cast aside as relegation fodder by most, then the inquiry has to start. But there have been, the injuries to Mina, who it seems like isn't going to be fit for this one on Monday night at the moment, unless something changes. Doucouré is a massive loss. Calvert-Lewin is a massive loss. You're arguably taking three of their most important players there. Or I think you are taking three of their most important players. Whether the three most important is up for debate. So it's going to be interesting to see how Rafa reacts, because that game is Rafa's nightmare. You know, to see a free-flowing game of football where your defence is all at sea and you're conceding five is not the way that Rafa Benitez likes his teams to be set out. So I'm interested to see how they react here and what Benitez does, because I don't think they're going to have any help in terms of returning players. What Benitez does to try and ensure that there isn't a repeat here against another side who, you know, you'd think are a more proficient attacking outfit than Watford.
Yeah, let's look a little bit at Wolves, Dave. Hwang Hee-chan, Wolves have suddenly got an additional goal threat to Raul Jimenez, kind of thing they could have done with last season, actually, when he was out. And they've had a lot of good performances this season, and they're starting to turn those into points now. And I would also say they've got a great collection of attacking players, because they've always got a couple of great options to bring off the bench as well. So things are really looking good for Wolves.
They are, but you know what the Wolves fans are like. They're moaning again now, aren't they? Just because...
What about...
The style of football now, it's gone back to like the Nuno style, hasn't it? It's been quite a bizarre season for Wolves. The fact that they were playing brilliantly at the start, they were having a million shots, they couldn't hit a barn door, they were losing games, but they were playing great. So they were there was always, okay, yeah, we'll take that, because we can see it just turning around just that little bit. And now Wolves aren't playing as well as they did previously earlier in the season, but they're now getting results. And I've heard a few of them moaning, kind of saying, yeah, but it's going back to the Nuno style. I'm not sure about this new guy yet. Personally, I'd be rather happy about it all. Not more so than the boy Wang, who cannot stop scoring. What is that? Four shots on target, four goals, which is a brilliant return for him as well. Not sure it can carry on that for the rest of the season, clearly. I think he's had seven shots in total, but it's a brilliant return. But it won't last.
Everton are as generous as they were last weekend.
That is true. And defensively, I think they've been solid as well. Connor Cody continues to be, I know he plays for Wolves, but he's a player that I like. I like a lot. I think he just gets on with the job. Seems a very likeable defender as well. Steady away as normal. Their XG conceded from open play is the third best in the Premier League. Defensively, they've got no problems whatsoever. And it's ticking along quite nicely for the Wolves as well. But I think just there, it's a bit of a head scratcher at the moment. They're having loads of chances. They weren't scoring. Now they're having not so many chances, but scoring. But the Wolves fans seem to be not that pleased about that.
Bizarre. I'd say someone who's going under the radar a little bit is Max Kilman as well in the back three.
That's very good back at bringing three now, the ball out. Yeah, they're all... I think it's... I mean, there are some places up for grabs, especially in that top half as well. So, Wolves obviously had a great win at your place. You know, they would have been... If they'd have won that game at Elland Road, they'd have been fourth in the Premier League, which is not too shabby, is it? So, and they've got games coming up against Everton, Palace, West Ham, Norwich and Burnley, you know, to real kick on and cement their place in the top half. So let's see where it all goes with Larger. So, it's far too early to make comparisons between Large and Nuno, but it'd be interesting to see how it goes.
I'd say it's certainly not worse at the moment, steady progress, I would say. What's your tip for this one, Steve?
Yeah, Martin Atkinson is in charge on this one. He's not that card happy. I know he sent two players off this season, Xhaka and Ward-Prowse, but he's only had 15 yellows in seven Premier League matches. So I fancy that trend to continue against these two. I'm going to go for under 3.5 cards in this one at Molineux.
Catch your referee geekery a little bit quiet recently, George. Much of that kind of stuff
going
on?
Well, I've had a look, but the games I've been allocated haven't been basically officiated by the ones who you want. So they'll come back soon, don't worry.
I look forward to that next week, now that I've pointed it out. Just enough time for me to remind you that you can sign up to The Athletic at the moment for just £3.33 a month. To do that, just head to theathletic.com/footballpod if you're not already a subscriber, and you can take advantage of that offer. Promises to be another great weekend of Premier League football. So thanks to Steve and thanks to George, and of course thanks to all you guys for listening as well. Wherever you get your podcasts, hit subscribe so you never miss a show. And Mark Chapman, David Ornstein and co are going to be back on this feed on Monday. You've been listening to The Athletic Football Podcast. Have a great weekend.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. $5, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.